This episode is brought to you by LifeLock. The holidays mean more travel, more shopping, more time online, and more personal info in places that could expose you to identity theft. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second. If your identity is stolen, their U.S.-based restoration specialist will fix it, guaranteed or your money back. Get more holiday fun and less holiday worry with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/podcast. Terms apply.
And welcome to the Brian Kilmeade Show. I am Mary Walter, sitting in for Brian Kilmeade. I'll be with you tomorrow. I'll be with you on Monday as well. It's been a while, so I miss you guys. I'm so glad to be back. It's so great to be with everybody again. I hope everyone had a very wonderful Christmas. I hope Santa brought you everything that you were looking for. And now we're into Happy Hanukkah. So Happy Hanukkah. We had a real Chrismukkah last night, where we had both Hanukkah and Christmas being celebrated. So I love when that happens. I kind of like when they mesh together. I don't know. It just feels, it feels different. So I enjoy that. We've got some great guests coming up later in this hour. Lieutenant Colonel Alan West will be joining us. We're going to talk about the Trump effect on the border and on foreign policy. You know, you can always chime in. I love when you call in. 866-408-7669 is my number. 866-408-7669. And you can also leave comments on X at Mary Walter Radio. There's no S, it's Mary Walter Radio. But kicking it off for us, a man who apparently never sleeps because he's everywhere, Griff Jenkins, Fox News correspondent, at Griff Jenkins on X, because apparently there's only one of him. Griff, oh, he's not here yet? Oh, all right. Well, Griff will be joining us real soon. He's going to be joining us to talk about all the news and everything, but the reason he's probably not here yet is because he's everywhere. Have you seen? I was watching Fox. I was like, oh my gosh, Griff is on like morning, noon, and night. He was everywhere. He was sitting in the anchor chair. He was reporting. He was with Carly Shimkus. It was just everywhere. So poor Griff being run ragged, but what a wonderful job he did. What a great job that he did. So one of the things I want to start off talking about is Donald Trump, and just the way he trolls the left is to me so delicious and so wonderful. I just love it, because what he does is the left always takes the bait, which is the part that I love the most about it. And he knows they're going to take the bait, and you got to laugh. Was he put some things out, and like, we know it, like we laugh at it. We're like, I don't know if he's serious. He's like partly serious, but I'm not sure if he's 100% serious, but either way, it's hilarious. This is what he put out a bunch of tweets, put it out on Truth Social, and then moved him over to X. And you know, he does it on both. So if you're not on Truth Social, you can still see them. And this is what he puts out there. He says, Merry Christmas to all, including to the wonderful soldiers of China, who are lovingly but illegally operating the Panama Canal, always making certain that the United States puts in billions of dollars in repair money, but will have absolutely nothing to say about anything. And he also noted where we lost 38,000 people in building the Panama Canal 110 years ago. So it was like such a beautiful little dig. I loved it. I thought it was just God, like, who called it God-like level trolling? I forgot who said that. God-like level trolling. And it's so true. It really was. He also went on to say, here we go, also to Governor Justin Trudeau of Canada, whose citizens' taxes are far too high. But if Canada was to become our 51st state, their taxes would be cut by more than 60%. Their businesses would immediately double in size, and they would be militarily protected like no other country anywhere in the world. Likewise, to the people of Greenland, which is needed by the United States for national security purposes, and who want the U.S. to be there, and we will. Now, I looked it up. Greenland has a population of fewer than 57,000 people. Wyoming has more people than Greenland, and Wyoming's our least populated state. It's the 57,000 people, because Greenland's an iceberg. It's just ice. It's always frozen. They actually purposely named it Greenland to try to get people to move there. Like, people would think, oh, it's green. It's not at all. But it's an autonomous country under the Kingdom of Denmark. So I don't know if it's super easy to just try to buy it. you know, you give each one of the Icelanders or Greenlanders $1 million, $57 million for Greenland, drop in the bucket. Doge can find that money anywhere. And he is right. We do need it for national security. And would they be better off? Maybe. You know, and, you know, he's trolling Justin Trudeau, and it's hilarious. And supposedly when this all happened at Mar-a-Lago, when Trudeau went down to Mar-a-Lago about a month ago, they had dinner. Trump was joking that if Trudeau didn't like the idea of facing the 25% tariff on goods from Canada and Mexico, then Canada could just become the 51st state and Trudeau could be the governor and they would avoid the tariff. And it was funny, and Trudeau laughed, but you know it was probably one of those nervous laughs because Trudeau just, he doesn't seem to be a very strong leader. And so, you know, but everybody supposedly laughed and got that it was a joke. But Donald Trump is just like, yeah, it's a joke now. It's a joke now. So we're going to talk about that with Griff, who's here now. Griff Jenkins, Fox News correspondent. You can find him on X at Griff Jenkins. Griff, welcome to the show. How are you?
Oh, my gosh, Mary. I'm so much better now that I'm on with you. We have been friends for many years, and it's always great to be on with you. And Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. And what I didn't catch, I was just doing Fox and Friends and ran up, but I know you were talking a little bit about President-elect Trump, and we were talking this morning on what a contrast between the Christmas Day messages. Biden, before he jaunts off to tropical paradise in St. Croix, puts out sort of a platitude-worthy, you know, I'm hopeful for the light of liberty, blah, blah, blah. I'm off to the Caribbean for a luxury vacation, as he has closed out the year for all 4 years of his presidency. Then Trump firing off one after the other. I'm taking Panama Canal. I may take Greenland. Canada better make Wayne Gretzky, the ice hockey legend, yes, the prime minister who I met with today, meaning on Christmas. And he says, Wayne said, listen, I don't want to do that, but even though he told me that, I just think the good people of Canada should maybe draft him to run. And then today I looked, Mary, and Janet Jones, Wayne Gretzky's wife, retweeted Trump's social media post. So maybe she's leading the thing. And so all of a sudden, you have this contrast of a president whose four-year term will end in just a matter of days. And, you know, the Democrat Party finds itself in a wilderness with the Democrat strategist Liz Smith saying that the Democrat Party's in the toilet, Joe Manchin saying that being called Democrat, the label itself, is now toxic, contrasted with the guy that won't be sworn in for just under a month from now, already making major world stage decisions and talking about things like Greenland, Panama Canal, and Canada, of which, of course, he's already made news by threatening a 25% tariff on them because our northern border has got just as much need for an attention as the southern border. It's not as bad, but it has also got a lot of areas that we need to clamp down.
So, yes. And by the way, I just want to let you know, I had originally given you this big intro, so I'm sorry. And I also want to give you credit because I've been watching and you're everywhere. You're on my screen. I'm like, there's Griff again. There's Griff again. Like, does this man go home? Does he sleep? I'm surprised you have a voice left.
You did
a yeoman's job. Yeoman's job.
Thank you. I have it on a good record that there's at least one Fox News viewer that said, all I want for Christmas is for this guy to get off my television. We did Fox and Friends yesterday, anchored some 1 to 4. But, you know, honestly, I would be remiss to say, you know, people are like, oh, gosh, you're working crazy hours. Did you draw the short straw? And it's anything but that. As a guy who came here in the year 2000 and has spent nearly a quarter of a century here at Fox News, there's no one I'd rather spend Christmas with, literally, than our great viewers and listeners to the Brian Kilmeade Show out there that have year after year faithfully been with us. And on Fox and Friends, you know, they share lots of their photos, so we get to kind of celebrate with them. I will go back this afternoon to Washington, and with my wife and two daughters, we're just going to delay the presents Christmas is on the 26th this year, so we'll do that tonight. But having the opportunity, honor, and privilege to spend time with the viewers of almost 25 years now that have really been there for us, it was a great time.
Well, I'm glad, and I know we enjoyed it. So you were talking about Donald Trump, and you said how, like, he has already started to act presidential. He's already gotten things moving, and I think that Donald Trump has been plotting this out easily for a year, if not longer. Joe Biden hasn't been our president for 4 years. We now know that he was not in on that decision to withdraw from Afghanistan. We now know that his aides, nobody knows who they are, they decide what information he gets and which information he doesn't get. So we've been run by unelected bureaucrats for the last 4 years. So Biden hasn't really been our president. And since he dropped out of the election, he's literally checked out. He's quiet quit. He just collects the paycheck, goes direct deposit into his account, and then he goes off somewhere. I don't know why we're still paying this man, but we are. But it just really illustrates that contrast between him and Donald Trump all the more. Daddy's home. Daddy's back, and it's time for the party to end. But you also mentioned Joe Manchin and the Democrat brand. And yes, they are, and you said they were wandering in the wilderness, and I agree. But don't sell them short. I think that Republicans have a very small window in which to act. Nancy Pelosi's not gone yet. That woman is, I don't agree with her with pretty much anything, but I admire her political sense. I admire her political ability. She is probably one of the most effective speakers in history. She did her job. She did it well. Mike Johnson is like an amateur compared to her. So she will get that Democrat brand back in line. She will get that messaging with a very, very willing media at her disposal back in line. Probably you're going to start to see it turn around, I would think, fairly quickly, because they're very good at what they do. They don't bump into walls the way Republicans do.
Yeah.
So,
if I can just weigh in on that, I mean, I think, Mary, you are very politically savvy, and you've been following this as I have. And we've lived through this through many years, and I can even remember when we were talking about, the Bill Clinton years back in even 90s. And you're being politically pragmatic, certainly, by saying, hang on, you never know. But here's the other.
Griff, 1 second. Let me just interrupt you right there. Hold that thought. And we're going to take a break, and I will be right back with you. So just hold that thought. I threw a lot at you before that, so I apologize. So just hold that thought right there.
I'll be right here.
All right. And we will be back with more of Griff Jenkins on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Jason in the House, the Jason Chaffetz Podcast. Dive deeper than the headlines and the party lines as I take on American life, politics, and entertainment. Subscribe now on foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you download podcasts.
From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
That guy lies. I'm Mary Walter, sitting in for Brian Kilmeade, and I'm here with Griff Jenkins. You all know him. You love him. You see him all the time. Follow him on X at Griff Jenkins. So before we went to that quick break, we were talking about, Joe Biden just being absent, and you had mentioned Bill Clinton, and, Donald Trump has been the de facto president since the election, and Joe Biden seems to be really cool about just letting it happen.
Well, and you are also saying, Mary, that, don't count out Nancy Pelosi's ability to try and bring the Democrat Party back to a brand that isn't being described as toxic or a party that's in the toilet, as Liz Smith, Democrat strategist, is saying. But it's politically pragmatic, certainly, because time and time again, we have seen, even by a 2-year turnaround from midterms, a comeback. But here's the problem, Mary. Here's what's different this time. And that is, it's not just trying to bring Democrats back to a little more central part, place where all of a sudden, the blue dog Democrats want to get reengaged and reenergized. They didn't just get the messaging wrong. They got the issues wrong. The Democratic Party in the November election read the room terribly wrong. And so now, when you talk about Pelosi's challenge in trying to bring the Democrat Party back into favor, you're talking about where the Democrat Party will stand on issues like the border. And already you're seeing from New York's governor here where I am, Kathy Hochul, to Governor Gavin Newsom out in California and all across the country and Chicago and other places, you're seeing Democrat leaders currently in power saying that we're not going to cooperate with sanctuary in sanctuary jurisdictions with Tom Homan when these deportations of criminal migrants like the violent Venezuelan gang TDA members. You're also seeing the fact that, you know, already the country is by and large supportive, it seems, of the Doge boys, Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy, coming in and trying to cut an overbloated government that has added $2 trillion to our debt. And you're already seeing Democrats like Congresswoman Jasmine Crockett saying, well, Doge is terrible, but as long as they're there, why don't they just cut drastically Trump's inauguration funds that all these billionaires and businesses are giving money to. Well, until you move the issues back to where the American people are, the messaging just isn't going to work. And I think therein lies their problem. Add to it the influence that I think the progressives, the squad, AOC, Pramila Jayapal, Ilhan Omar, we just watched them over the past year have enormous influence on the Biden White House, particularly when it came to the war in Gaza, in taking a tougher stance than the traditionally across every administration, and undeniable, the buck stops here, we fully support Israel 100%. You saw some wavering. What was that? That was the squad flexing progressive muscle. And so don't think for a second they're going to go quietly into the good night. So I think the challenge is quite significant, and it may take more than just one cycle to the midterms for Democrats to find their footing and figure out the ultimate question, which is, what are you? Because the working class no longer feels like you represent us. And what do you support?
Yeah. No, you're right. A different note, there's so many things I wanted to talk with you about. Did anybody notice that Bill Clinton got discharged from the hospital? Like, Bill Clinton went into the hospital. It wasn't that big of a deal. And then, like, nobody said anything about it afterwards. It's like nobody cared. Nobody wondered where Bill Clinton was. I found it to be so odd. Nobody said a word about it.
Well, it is interesting. And he had the spokesperson of sorts say that he's feeling fine. It was just precautionary. And in fairness, as a reporter, you look at this and say, well, he did have the heart surgery and had heart problems. And so, look, when you get to his age in your 70s and beyond, you certainly would take no shortage of precautions if he wasn't feeling well, but it obviously was something more than just a cold, because he ended up in the Georgetown Hospital ER being addressed, but we haven't heard much more about that.
Yeah. Griff, speaking of age, rumor has it that you're trying to relive your youth. This played out recently with Carly Shipkus.
Do you want to skateboard back?
I do. I knew you were going to do that.
I can get back on the skateboard. We're coming over.
Oh, see?
Christmas.
That is a great wipeout. I love it.
Are you okay? That's gonna...
Did you hurt yourself when you wiped out on the skateboard?
Not at all. And okay, I will forever hold on to my youth as a guy who just turned 54. I don't know what was going through my mind thinking I could ride that skateboard, but at least I made it look good, because I never was a good skateboarder. So at least I learned to fall.
Well, Griff Jenkins, thank you so much for joining me. Please go get some sleep. Go home and enjoy Christmas with your family. Thank you for taking the time to join me here on the Brian Kilmeade Show. All the best.
Always great to join you. And I got The Outnumbered coming up at noon. Check it
out. Fantastic. Don't miss it, guys. Brian Kilmeade Show. More coming up.
A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I said, you ought to figure out how you lost somebody like me. I was born as a Democrat because of my grandfather's love of FDR. I was a very strong Democrat because of my family's love of John Fitzgerald Kennedy. I came through the whole iteration. And then I was a Democrat in West Virginia, and it's always been a 75-80% plurality of Democrat, registered Democrats. But there was a split. I was never in the liberal side of it. I was never in the establishment side. So I always had to fight my way through.
But is it a shift on the social
brand
issues?
Yeah. The brand got so bad. Mm-hmm. The D brand has been so maligned from the standpoint of it's toxic. And the D brand is basically this, you know, I've told him, I said, first of all, as an American and as someone in Senate, and I'm going to take the Constitution, oath of the Constitution that I take very, 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 very seriously, I'm going to help every human being pursue the happiness life in their life, pursuit of happiness. I don't care who they are. I don't care what color. I don't care any of the things. Who they love and love. Do it, and that's you. I'm going to make sure you have the opportunity and right to live your life. Just don't make your life, if it might be on the extremes or in the minority, a few, make me believe that's the norm. Or make me and my family believe, or my children believe, or this or that. No. I will protect you. Just don't try to mainstream it. And the Democratic Party, the Washington Democrats, have tried to mainstream the extreme.
Exactly. And that was West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin speaking with CNN's Manu Raju. And we were just talking about this with Griff Jenkins. We were just speaking about how the Democrat brand needs a reset. And he said, you know, Griff said, you know, they're wandering in the wilderness. And I said, well, you know, I don't know. Nancy Pelosi may very well be able to pull this together and, you know, take things in the direction that the Democrats need to go. And I don't know. And you do have just like, and you see this in both parties. You had this, this was the Republicans probably 4 years ago, right? After the Donald Trump presidency, you had the Mitt Romneys and the, I'm forgetting her name, out of Alaska, Lisa Murkowski. And you know, you had that group, you had Paul Ryan, and they were very anti-Trump. There was a lot of anti-Trumpers that were a part of the Republican Party. And they either self-deported or they got voted out. You know, Liz Cheney, you know, voted out. So we'll have to see if the same thing happens on the left. But I think you've got that struggle that they have now with the far left of their party. So it's going to be very interesting to see how it plays out. And do not underestimate the power of one Nancy Pelosi. Let's go south, shall we? Let's head to Texas, where we find Lieutenant Colonel Alan West. He's the Dallas County GOP chair, American Constitutional Rights Union executive director. He's a former congressman himself. Find him on X at Alan West. Merry Christmas, my friend. Welcome to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Hi.
Merry Christmas, Marion, to you and the listening audience. I pray everyone had a great Christmas and a happy Hanukkah also.
Yes, happy Hanukkah and almost happy New Year. And by the way, you can find Alan West on my podcast on YouTube. On the audio is available on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Just look for Mary Walter Radio and you will find him there. And if you find the right one, because he's been on more than once, there are baby pictures of Alan West posted there. So I'm just going to say.
Gosh.
And he's everything you expect a little Alan West to look like. So that was a very fun podcast that you did with me. You were game for everything, and I really appreciated that. Let's talk about the Trump effect. We kind of I was talking about this with Griff Jenkins just before you came on, and you're saying that Donald Trump has basically been the de facto president since the election. Right. And even before that, he was tweeting things out. We know he's been talking to world leaders, and Joe Biden's been absent. Joe Biden's been absent. We now know for 4 years he hasn't been making decisions. We have people we don't know who they are making decisions for the country and taking this country in certain directions and getting us into wars. And Joe Biden now isn't even trying. Like, they're not even pretending anymore. He hasn't been. What has he done since the election, or since he dropped out, really, other than collect a paycheck? What has he done? And, well, let me ask you about these unelected bureaucrats who are running the country who say that Joe Biden wasn't even involved in the decision to leave Afghanistan and how they left Afghanistan. Has this ever happened before?
No, I don't think this has ever happened before. And that's why this is really a blackout on the Democrat Party. I don't know how they're going to survive this. They're looking at, I think, a long-term political exile because of what we have seen happen in these past 4 years. And, you know, in a way, Mary, we almost have to be thankful that it turned out this way in 2020. So we really got to see what the left was all about these past 4 years. And the fact that I think that it was Barack Obama and the cabal of his, you know, acolytes that were really running things, all of the folks that he left in this current administration, and to include the 2, 3, 4, maybe 5 level deep of bureaucrats that are there. But Joe Biden, I mean, when you think about the decisions that he has made since the election, I mean, to allow Ukraine to fire eight TACMS missiles into Russia, why did he not allow that to happen prior to that? We look at all of these commutations that he is allowing. I mean, these are some very hardened criminals and murderers that he is commuting their sentences. And, you know, it's just so many things that have happened that just leads us to understand, thank God, that Donald Trump won and we don't have a Kamala Harris, because the same cabal would still be in charge of things going forward for the United States of America.
Yeah. And you're right. We're in wars now, and we don't know who got us in. But I'm with you. I think it's Barack Obama, Susan Rice, Valerie Jarrett. You know, he got the band back together. That's why he didn't move out of D.C. after he left the presidency. I think every president has moved out of D.C. I believe I read somewhere he was the first one to not move out.
Yeah, he was the first one. I mean, Harry Truman, I mean, he even drove himself back to Missouri out of Washington, D.C. That's how bad he didn't want to stay. But, you know, you think about it when we talk about post-election, I think, and maybe you will agree, that the biggest loser out of this is Barack Obama. I mean, that's really the person that you have heard nothing from post this election, because you can just imagine how much he'd be running his mouth if Kamala Harris had won. But I think that he has no more political capital. I think that we have a great opportunity to, you know, eliminate and eradicate his tentacles out of this federal government right now with Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy cutting down to all these bureaucrats. I think that we're going to see a really big pendulum swing in the right direction for the United States of America, and especially the effectiveness and efficiency of our federal government.
You know, that's a great point. He was kind of relevant when he left. He's tweeting out like his playlists and the books he's reading, like anybody cares. But he really lost his relevance. I think he realized he had lost his relevance when he had that conversation with the young black men, and he was telling them how they're misogynistic. Like, that's something, you're not vote for her because you're misogynist. That went over like a lead balloon. And I believe he was truly shocked. It's always fun to watch the liberal elites, whether they're in Hollywood or Washington, D.C., have people tell them to their face that you have no clue what the hell is going on out here, so you need to sit down and be quiet. And that's exactly what happened to him, and it was delicious.
Yeah, it was. I mean, basically, you know, black men in America told Barack Obama to have a, you know, nice hot cup or shut the hell up. And I don't think he knows how to take that. I mean, really. And I think he's sitting back there and figuring, you know, what do I do? Where do I go? I mean, I was the king of the Democrat Party, Michelle and I. And now the next thing you know, Donald Trump has come back. And, you know, without a doubt, again, I think that you're going to see a reshaping of the federal government. I think that Obama's legacy is going to be taken apart. Joe Biden has no legacy other than the foolishness and the corruption that we saw from him, and the lack of competency. So I think that this is going to be an incredible year. But as you know, Mary, Republicans have a way of stealing defeat from the jaws of victory. You know what I'm talking about. Uh-huh. And we already saw it with this continuing resolution spending package. And so they've got to put on their big boy and big girl pants, because the American people are expecting some very definitive things to happen.
Yeah, absolutely. In the time that we have left, I wanted to quickly talk about the Trump effect on the border and foreign policy. And I know that's a lot to get to in 3 minutes, two and a half. But if anyone can do it, you can. And are you seeing an effect, a Trump effect on the border already?
Of course you are. You know, the fact that you're having some people trying to rush to the border, but when you've got Tom Homan that is barnstorming across the country, and he is poking his finger in the chest of these leftist mayors and governors, saying, you can try all you want, but you're going to be held criminally liable as a felony offense to obstruct justice. And that's what we have to look at. And furthermore, what idiot would want to protect criminal illegal immigrants from being deported? They care less about the American people. And I'm talking about Pritzker, Johnson, the mayor of Chicago, and several others. And foreign policy-wise, yes, look at how you've had all of these leaders, look at all these tech leaders coming down to Mar-a-Lago to speak with President Trump. He is already in charge of this country, whether or not people want to admit it or not.
Yeah, absolutely. And foreign policy-wise, do you think he's being treated by basically the rest of the world as the de facto president at this point?
Yes, I do. And I think that right now Iran and the Ayatollahs are shaking like, you know, leaves on a cold winter day. Bashar Assad in Syria has collapsed. And that's due in part of, you know, Israel staying strong and saying that, you know, we're going to be resolute. Now they know they have a president that has their back. And I think you're going to see a return to peace in the Middle East with the Abraham Accords and the defunding of Iran. They were bankrupt in the previous Trump administration. They'll be bankrupt again.
Yeah. Yeah. I just love the way he trolls them with, you know, like, yeah, we're going to buy Greenland. We need Greenland, too. You know, there's only like 56,000 of you there. So we're going to take Greenland, if you don't mind.
And the Panama Canal. We need the Panama Canal back.
Canada. And it's just so funny. Like, half the joy that I get from that is watching the left light their hair on fire if they haven't already shaved it off. So it just brings me such joy. It really does. Yeah. Lieutenant Colonel Alan West, thank you so much for joining me. Follow him on X at Alan West, and you have a very blessed new year. I am looking forward to 2025. Oh, I hope I got my hopes up. I hope that's not for naught. But thank you. Thanks for joining.
I look forward to future chats with you, Mayor. God bless and happy new year.
Your call's coming up, 866-408-7669, and I've got some comments on X that we will talk about as well. There's so much to get to today. There's a lot going on. The news never stops. We've got it for you on The Brian Kilmeade Show.
Giving you everything you need to know. You're with Brian Kilmeade. A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
In a couple of words, what is the Democratic brand?
It's basically infringement on me making decisions. And let me tell you why. The Democrat I grew up being, they wanted to make sure the people had an opportunity for a good job, a good pay. They would make sure you got a decent pay where you have some benefits and you can enjoy your family and make sure you had a safe working condition. That was one of those things. Okay. That's all. They never infringed over and, oh, you can't live your life that way. Or you can't say this. You can't do this. I mean, there was a fairness in
it. You think it's changed?
It has changed tremendously. Mm-hmm. They have basically expanded upon thinking, well, we wanted to protect you there, but we're going to tell you how you should live your life from that far on. It's the mindset of the left, the progressive left, which was always a minority. In West Virginia, the Democratic Party is perceived to pour more attention and more resources to people that are capable and able-bodied that won't work or don't work than those that do.
You're listening to Joe Manchin in an interview with Manu Raju and talking about why he left the Democrat Party. And you keep hearing this, and they're having the same, I think, same existential crisis that Republicans went through. And it was the MAGA brand of Republicanism versus the old guard, the GOP, the grand old party, and the Mitch McConnells of that party. And, you know, Mitch McConnell's still there, still hanging in there. But a lot of them have just self-deported. Paul Ryan, bye-bye. You know, he didn't want to hang around for it. Liz Cheney, I love that she ran again, which is hilarious. And she got voted out. So a lot of them are getting voted out. You see Joni Ernst getting in line now. She was against Pete Hegseth. Now all of a sudden Joni Ernst is in line, and she's suggesting bills that will support DOGE. All of a sudden Joni Ernst is getting in line. I think they're starting to realize on the right that it's Trump's brand of Republicanism that is winning the day. And it is bringing people in who normally would vote Democrat, but to what Joe Manchin is saying, the Democrat Party's got so far to the left, to the squad, to, you know, Jamal Bowman, bye-bye, he's out, right? It's that far left. You saw AOC just lose a race now for leadership on the Democrat side because she's too extreme. So the left is just a little bit further behind the curve on the changes that are coming, you know, and what Joe Manchin said there about they look at the Democrat Party as people who give things to benefit other people, not Americans. And he's right. He's right. West Virginia, the Democrat Party is perceived to put more attention into people who won't work than those that do. And you see people coming into this country illegally, and we put them in hotels, you know, 5-star hotels, and we give them 3 meals a day, and they have cleaning service, they have maid service, and they're getting credit cards with thousands of dollars on it that's refilled every month, and all sorts of things. And people in North Carolina who lost everything, people in Maui who lost everything are getting nothing from the government. You just had U.S. Cellular step in to North Carolina to give these people for Christmas. They gave them new iPhones, iPads, Wi-Fi hotspots, and 2 years of free service from U.S. Cellular. They made a $235,000 donation. And they're stepping in because the government only does that for people who come into this country illegally. So Joe Manchin is right. They are perceived to put more attention into people who won't work than those that do. If you work, they just view you as a source of tax dollars. Sadly, it's exactly what it is. They just view you as a source of tax dollars. So very quickly, I want to go into this. There's a little bit more here. I'm going to jump ahead and to cut 11. Well, actually, no, let's jump ahead to cut 11 because it's shorter. This is Lindy Lee on Fox Business. And she, too, big fundraiser for the Democrats. Listen to her.
So what's been the response, Lindy, since you made your announcement?
Vitriolic. And they say they're not a cult, but look at how they behave when one of their own dares to think for herself. The excommunication, the defamation, the public shaming, the boycott campaigns, the psychological terrorism. I no longer have comments on any of my social media. Because it's just too much. I don't need that. It's just endless. And as soon as you step out of line, they will get you.
Yeah, because Lindy Lee said, I'm out. And part of her problem with all of this was that she's a big fundraiser, but she also made a ton of money off social media and by being, you know, being in the can for the Democrats. But she is a big fundraiser for them. She said they essentially set $2.5 billion on fire. We still haven't gotten any answers as to why Oprah, a billionaire, was paid $2.5 million through her production company. They spent $500,000 essentially bribing Al Sharpton moments before he interviewed her. And this is our hard-earned money. This is the money that I worked so hard to raise. And I think you're going to see a lot of donors kind of beat feet from the Democrat Party because of that. I really do. I'm Mary Walter, in for Brian Kilmeade on The Brian Kilmeade Show. Wow, thank you so much. Yes, I'm Mary Walter, sitting in for Brian Kilmeade. Day after Christmas, happy Hanukkah. We have started the Festival of Lights. So happy Hanukkah to those who celebrate. Yeah, should we get right to it? Yeah, let's do it, because we were just talking off the air. This woman is probably the nicest person you would ever meet, whether in television, radio, in life. If you are lucky enough to have met this woman, get to know this woman, you are better for it. Janice Dean, Fox News chief meteorologist and best-selling author, joins us. Follow her on X at Janice Dean. It is not an act, folks. She really is the sweetest person to walk the planet. Janice, thank you so much for joining me.
Mary, happy Christmas, Merry Christmas, happy Hanukkah, whatever you celebrate. It's wonderful to hear your voice this morning.
I was very excited when I saw that you were coming on the show. I was like, yes, I was very, very happy about that. Because, I mean, it's the day after the holidays, and well, day after Christmas. Now it's the beginning of Hanukkah. Last night we had a Chrismica yesterday. And yet in North Carolina, which just hit so hard. And you know what? We forget about Maui as well. Like Maui was just memory hold. Those poor people were treated the way the people in North Carolina are being treated by our government with disaster relief. And I'm looking at a pronouncement from Governor Roy Cooper of North Carolina that donations of $15.5 million were made to the North Carolina Disaster Relief Fund. And that's awesome, but where's the government? I mean, I don't really think it's the government's job, but since we have it and we do it, it is their job now. They've assumed this position. I'm seeing so many posts about people having to sleep in their cars when there's a little house right there that was built for them, but they're not allowed to sleep in the little house. That's sleep in their car. What is happening?
It's a good question, and it's a sad one. And I'm glad you brought up Maui as well, because, you know, it was just a year ago we were talking about the devastating fires
in Maui, and they're still hurting there. It's going to take years, if not tens of years, to really rebuild and help the people of Maui. They've lost lives. They've lost family members. And the same goes for North Carolina. You know, we have these incredible disasters year after year. And I was just out in North Carolina with my friends from the FDNY and Tunnel to Towers Foundation, where we brought toys from New York. And with the help of the Fox News listeners and the radio listeners, we were able to bring $80,000 worth of toys from New York for kids that maybe wouldn't have celebrated Christmas because they don't have a home because of the devastating floods from Hurricane Helene in August. So it's frustrating because I talk to a lot of people on the ground and they say the help is coming from the local people and right. from different states, people driving in from different states. I met two women from Georgia that just decided one day that they were going to fill their car with diapers and food and non-perishable items for the folks in North Carolina because they felt like they weren't getting the attention and help that they needed from the government. And you're right. I wish I could tell you you're wrong. The federal government is helping. They're not. And people are still in tents. People are still displaced. I met one man named Joe who has thankfully a place to stay because of a donation of a small motorhome where he could stay right next to the place where his home was completely wiped off his foundation. So that's the sad reality. They're getting help from their neighbors and strangers, but no help from FEMA.
Yeah, and we need to find out, and this is what I hope for in 2025, that there will be accountability. We now know that they were bypassing homes that had Trump flags out, and that was an edict that came down from someone, but we never know who the people are who put these things out. It's totally traceable, but yet we never find out who they are, and they're never held accountable. And that's what really bothers me.
It shouldn't be about politics. You know, when I met all of these people, I never asked them who they voted for because they have nothing. They have nothing because of a devastating, natural disaster. And that's the sad part is maybe as we go through the next 4 years, there won't be that politicization of natural disasters. Unfortunately, it's been going on for a very long time, Mary. But these people still do need our help, and they are so grateful to get some attention because I feel like you're right. The news cycle kind of goes on, and we kind of don't remember what happened. But it's important. I know that Fox Weather is doing really good work with certainly North Carolina and the other devastated places by natural disasters because we still need to keep them in our prayers and we still need to shine a spotlight on what happened.
Yeah. One thing I was just saying this before I just saw a story on X. And I follow certain people to find out what's going on there because this is just killing me. I mean, my area went through Sandy, so I get it. And it was never the government that came in and helped, to your point. It was neighbors. It was the Amish who came in and ripped out the floors and the wallboards up to a certain height to keep the black mold from condemning the building, right? Like from growing and they'd have to condemn it. The Amish went into North Carolina and built these tiny little homes for them. And the code enforcement, now this seems to me to be a state issue, comes in and says, well, they don't meet code. And they apparently don't meet code because they don't have electricity in them or something along those lines. Well, of course they don't have electricity. Where are they going to plug anything in? They're in an area with no electricity. It just seems to be really petty and annoying. And I don't know. It just enrages me. It really does. Like they have to sleep in their car, which probably doesn't meet code either, but not the little tiny house that's sitting right there next to them. And I don't know what the solution to that is. I don't know how we unravel that.
Well, just talking about it, right? I mean, you bringing it up on the show today, social media has been a force for good when it comes to the folks of North Carolina, because there are people out there that are highlighting and taking videos and talking about things that maybe aren't in the news headlines right now. You know, if you look up North Carolina on X or Facebook or any of those things, you can find out what's happening on the ground by people who are living there and trying to help and trying to raise awareness. So that's what it comes down to, is, you know, shouting from the rooftop sometimes, in the capacity that you have. You know, one person can make a difference. There are many people on the ground that live in North Carolina that are using their voices for good to raise these important questions and things that need to be resolved. This is the United States of America. We have to help our own.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I just saw it was posted that for Christmas, U.S. Cellular made a $235,000 donation in the form of brand new iPhones, iPads, Wi-Fi hotspots, and 2 free years of service from U.S. Cellular for the people in Western North Carolina. That's huge. I saw just on Christmas Eve, NASCAR teamed up with Lowe's. And Lowe's built these homes, these tiny houses, you know, again, they're little homes. And NASCAR provided these trucks to tow them to where the area in which they were going to go. And they got them. It is private. What did I read? There's been 75 private little homes that have been built and donated and delivered in Western North Carolina by Americans. You know, just groups of Americans who are doing this on their own. And you know how many FEMA has delivered? 75.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. You know, when I was there and saw the devastation firsthand, and by the way, it's hard to even explain. It's hard to even put into words, let alone put into pictures. You can't understand the scope of the damage unless you are there on the ground to actually see it and how widespread it is. It's not just one little area. It's many areas that are devastated. And to listen to these folks and hear the stories of what they've gone through, in many ways, it felt hopeless. But then when you see all of these people, these strangers helping each other, it brought hope. You know, so it's kind of this strange situation where it's so devastating. But then you see all of these people who are coming together to help their neighbors. And that's what's beautiful about the whole thing. And these people are hopeful. Mary, they're very hopeful, you know, even when they've lost everything. The thing I took away was that they believed that they were going to be okay. And many people, I would say probably most of the population, believe in God. And they pray every day, and they know that God is going to help them through others. And so that, you know, that's the big takeaway.
My concern is that they feel forgotten, especially the people of Maui. I mean, they were just forgotten. They got a $700 check from FEMA. See ya. And that was it. I mean, nothing for those poor people. What happened to them is absolutely criminal. And I wish we could shine the spotlight back on them as well. Obviously, North Carolina being on the mainland, they're going to get more attention. But do they feel forgotten is what I fear.
Well, you know, I think that they're trying to remain hopeful, right? I mean, just being there from Fox and telling their stories, they don't feel forgotten, but we need to continue that. And so for the folks of Maui, that's another important part of this, is that there are many places that have been devastated and they do feel forgotten. But I'm grateful for you, Mary, who continue to talk about this, because if one person hears this and they know of another person that's on the island, or they can somehow, you know, get a message that they still need help, you know, one person telling another person, that's the way the world works sometimes. And so because of North Carolina, maybe it's time to remember other places that haven't gotten the spotlight on them, because I really do believe as Americans, we have the power to help each other. And sometimes that means forgetting that the government is going to be there.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, they would say if you count on the government for anything, you're going to be terribly disappointed, which is sad. It's very sad. But Janice, I'm so jealous you got to go down there. Thank you for doing that. Thank you to Fox Weather going down there, shining the light on this and really bringing it home. And there are so many wonderful organizations is what I'm looking for. Organizations that you can donate to. Samaritan's Purse, of course, is the big one. There's the Cajun Navy. There's there's just so many of them. There's tons of them. There's people who are trying to get them campers, and there's a lot of organizations. Be very careful, obviously, when you donate, if that's what you choose to do. But there are some very reputable ones. I'm looking at United Cajun Navy donated 300 bikes to the kids, said they got something for Christmas. So they are being taken care of. But to your point, bottom line, not by the government. And we're doing it and we have to do it. And I hope you get to go down there again because I don't want them to feel forgotten. That's my hope. And if you can bring that to them, God bless you. I would love that.
I will plan on doing that. And Fox Weather, as I mentioned, that is their mandate in the new year, is to continue to keep shining a light on areas that really need your help and support.
Well, Janice, thank you so much. God bless and have a wonderful, blessed new year.
You too, Mary. Thank you so much.
Thank you. 866-408-7669. If you'd like to chime in, if you want to jump in, we have a lot to talk about. I'd love to hear from you. And also, you can reach out to me on X at Mary Walter Radio. If you can't maybe make a phone call, but you know can type something out on your phone and you want to make a comment, you can put it there and I will try to get to your comments and calls and multitask at the same time. Sometimes that's funny. Sometimes that winds up being pretty funny. I'm Mary Walter. Got a lot more coming up on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Educating, entertaining, enlightening. You're with Brian Kilmeade. The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
He's a great guy. He just, remember him hugging Nixon and then.
So what?
I know, but at the time he was, yes, he was seen as a traitor.
It's so funny you mention that because, like, today we live in this time when you're not allowed to have friends from the other side or cross lines politically. And I forgot that there's an example of that way back when.
Yeah.
A guy who crossed lines politically. Ooh, the worst thing you could ever do, be friends with a Republican? Ah, call 911.
Yeah.
This is what I hate about the left. Like, you know, and they're not going to get me over to the Trump side, which they think they will sometimes. But just the idea that, you know, cut your family off for Thanksgiving if they voted for the wrong guy.
Well,
off you.
Well, I don't know.
And Sammy, but when he hugged Nixon, he was ostracized.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
By the left a lot. That was an early harbinger of that.
All right. That's Bill Maher and Jay Leno on Bill's Club Random podcast. And they were talking about Sammy Davis Jr. And talking about, like, this is kind of the track that we were on back then. That was what, the 70s. That's the track we were on. And we've you see it and you hear and you see it all over social media that people saying, oh, I'd rather spend Thanksgiving by myself than with my family because they're all Trumpers. And I don't know. I'm sure it goes the other way as well. But there's a poll out by the Public Religion Research Institute. And they posted this poll just before Christmas, and they found that as Christmas approaches, Democrat voters, 23%, are nearly five times as likely as Republican voters, 5%, to say that they will be spending less time with certain family members because of their political views. Now, here's the thing. If I were going to someone's home, whether it's family or whomever, if whatever their political views are, they can have it. I'm in their home. I'm not getting in a fight with somebody. I can't. You're not going to change any minds. And I'm just to that point in this process that we're going through with this intolerance and all this other stuff that I can't. I just can't anymore. I'm not going to change your mind. If you want to be uncivil, if you want to be a jerk, feel free. Knock yourself out. You'd have to push me at this point to get me to react. And there are very few people whose homes I'm not going to go to. I'm more likely to not go to the people's homes who ostracized me during COVID because I didn't get the vaccine. And so I was ostracized and not allowed to come to family events and this and that and everything else. So at this point in the game, I feel if I go to something and somebody gets sick, I'm getting blamed. So I'm not going. So that's just self-preservation. But only 5% of Republicans versus 23% of Democrats, they're going to spend less time with family over politics. 866-408-7669. I want to get your comments on this. Did anybody have to deal with any of this? Maybe you're that person and you could use a different name. Nobody's going to know who you are. You know, make up a different state wherever you're from. I'm curious how many people had to deal with this or you chose not to. Maybe you said, you know what? I'm not going to deal with this because they're crazy. I'm not going. I'll sit at home, have my little ham, whatever it was, and I'm just not going to deal. I have neighbors. I don't know what their political affiliation is. I just know that they're really good people and I really like them. And I love that. We don't talk politics. It's so refreshing to not talk politics. Some people just have to talk about it all the time. So I'm curious if you had any kind of experience like this. And the president and the founder of the organization that did this, PRRI, said it may be tense around the Hanukkah and Christmas table. It's not just that we're disagreeing about abortion or we're disagreeing about taxes or even immigration, but we're disagreeing about a fundamental worldview and about identity. And I just think that people on the right, especially the MAGA people who are all in on Trump, they've been shouted down and had to keep it under wraps since, what, 2015? So we're less likely to do that now. We're much more vocal now. But I also think we're a little bit smarter with picking our battles. I could be wrong. So I'll get your calls coming up. Don't disappoint me on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
And welcome back to the Brian Kilmeade Show. I'm Mary Walter, sitting in for Brian. You can join me at 866-408-7669. That is my number. You can also reach out to me on X at Mary Walter Radio if you want to leave a comment there. That's fine. I'll try to multitask and get to all of your comments. But we're talking about Bill Maher, I have never known how to say his name. He was talking with Jay Leno, and he was talking about Sammy Davis Jr., and Sammy Davis was ostracized because he hugged Nixon. And, you know, Nixon being a Republican, he hugged Nixon. How dare you? How can you be friends with a Republican? And he said, this was the harbinger of things to come. This was the beginning of it. We're going to go down the road where you can't be friends with someone who's a Republican. And we just had a poll come out just before Christmas from the Public Religion Research Institute that found that 23% of Democrats are more than happy to spend less time / family time because of political differences. They won't dine with you because of political differences, where it's only 5% of Republicans who said the same thing. A November CBS News YouGov survey found that 72% of voters who supported Harris and 62% of voters who supported Trump want to avoid talking politics on Thanksgiving. Slightly more Trump voters and Harris voters wanted to discuss politics, though, of course, because it was just before Thanksgiving. So I get that. But I think that's the best word. Just don't talk about politics. You got other things going on, right? So just don't talk about politics. That's fine. Even if you know what the person's politics are. I just don't think the left has that ability to be tolerant. They keep telling us they're tolerant. I just don't think they are. I just don't think they got the tolerance in them. But that's just me. All right, let's go to Jerry in Florida. Jerry, welcome. You're on the Brian Kilmeade Show. Happy Hanukkah. Hi.
Good morning.
Hi, go ahead. What's your story? So what happened? Did you have problems over the holidays?
So not this year.
Okay.
Specifically, but my story's, I think it amazes me. So I was adopted in the Michigan closed adoption system,
mm-hmm,
63 years ago.
Okay.
In my efforts to get a passport, I found out that I had a different name that I never knew about. And it's a long story I won't bore you with, but I wound up finding and meeting my birth mother when I was 52 years old. We developed a wonderful relationship. It was neat to know her and to meet my, you know, my blood relatives, if you will.
Sure, and, sure, yeah.
And, you know, I was excited, and she came to Florida numerous times, and I went to Northern Michigan numerous times, and we hung out together and developed what I believe to be a very close relationship. Then came 2016, and through the course, I'm a Trump supporter. Now, I want to clarify that I'm a Trump policy supporter. I probably wouldn't like the man if I actually got a chance to know him. He's just not my style. A little too pompous for me.
Actually, Jerry, having met him and spent some time, he's very down to earth, very low key, and wicked funny.
Then I'll reserve my opinion there. Not personally knowing the man. I just love his business sense,
mm-hmm,
and his sense of patriotism. So, anyways, moving forward with that, when she found out I was a Trump supporter, she was personal friends with this guy named Michael Moore.
Oh, yeah. I think I've heard of him.
That was in northern Michigan. And, I mean, she was a fanatical, I mean, just absolutely lunatic left winger. And she contacted me and said, I don't have any use for you moving forward. I don't want to see you. I don't want to hear you. I don't want to talk. I'm like, what? This is because I'm a Donald Trump supporter? But fast forward, she got bone cancer. And unfortunately, she passed away. Just prior to that happening, I had contacted her. I said, you know, I'd like to see you one more time. You know, and she said, you're not welcome here. And I sit back and I chuckled. I said, okay, well, then, you know, of course, I'll respect your wishes. They asked me to come to a memorial service for her, and I said, you know, if I did that, it would indicate in some manner that I respected the way she lived her life. And you know what? I don't. And so I'm not going to be there. And you know, I wrote her something. And you know, basically, you know, what I said was that in the end, where I'm concerned, I wound up with her exactly where I started. The day she had me, she walked away.
You know, it's hard. The whole adoption thing is hard. I have an immediate family member, my sibling, who is adopted. My mother's sibling's adopted, and her daughter's adopted, and I have cousins who are adopted. So we have a lot of adoption in our family, and I love it, and I think it's beautiful and wonderful. And I don't look at it as a mother walking away. I look at it as a mother making a very tough decision. I don't think it's an easy decision. So I give her grace for that. She wanted you to have a better life than she could give you, and I think that that's wonderful. I just think that for some people, liberalism is a disease. That's just the way I view it. That their brains are broken, and it's so deep in their bones. They're emotion based, and when you have an emotion, when politics is your religion, every tenet of that religion you have deep belief in. So you're attacking her religion. You're attacking her beliefs. You know, and so they react emotionally. So sorry that this is happening. This is such a sad story to me because of my family and adoption. This to me is I think every adoptee's nightmare, that they're going to go meet their birth parent if that's what they choose to do, and that person rejects them. And I can't imagine what that feels like. And I'm very, very sorry that that happened to you. But you seem to be handling it, at least right now, at least on the radio. I don't know if that's how it is otherwise, and it's something I think you probably have to work through. But Jerry, thank you for sharing that. I really appreciate it. And I hope you have a wonderful 2025 with many blessings. So thank you so much for joining me. That's sad. If you don't have like adoption, you don't know a lot of adopted people, it's tough. It really is when to have a birth parent, you know, not want to get in touch with you, but they have a life, which I understand that too. And they thought it was going to be a closed adoption. And so they mentally handle it however they can. And then there you are on the doorstep. That's kind of hard too. So, all right, Chuck, hang on. I will get to you next, because I want to give you more time than I currently have here right now, because I'm being super generous because it's the holidays. No, I just want to hear what Chuck has to say. So Chuck, hang on. You can join us as well as 866-408-7669. Talking about families dividing and splitting up, choosing not to spend holidays together because of the politics. I couldn't think of the word there. I was going to say Thanksgiving. And I'm like, no, it's because of politics. It's not because of Thanksgiving. And sometimes you don't want to go because of the food. But politics, and Democrats almost five times more likely than Republicans to not want those people at their dinner table. It's got to be sad to live in an insular world like that. All right, we'll get more coming up right here on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Want even more, Brian? Download the podcast at BrianKilmeadeShow.com. Every episode, exclusive interviews, on demand. More of Kilmeade coming up. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I'm Mary Walter, in for Brian Kilmeade. 866-408-7669 is my number. We're talking about the holidays and family and friends where you may have political differences. You view it differently. Maybe you're happy about the election. Maybe you're not so happy about the election. And a new poll that shows that almost five times as many Democrats as Republicans would keep someone away or would not celebrate with someone who is a supporter of the opposite party or the opposite candidate. And I'm just curious to find out if you've had any kind of experience with this, especially after this last election, this past Thanksgiving, Christmas, and maybe you're dealing with it during Hanukkah or New Year's. 866-408-7669. Let's go to Oklahoma. Chuck, thanks for hanging on. You're on the Brian Kilmeade Show. Welcome.
Thank you. How are you?
Doing just great, and Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, and Happy New Year.
Thank you very much. We just celebrated a wonderful Christmas and Thanksgiving as well. But this issue kind of struck home because I've got a daughter and her four grandkids who live in town here with us, and we have very different political views, very different. She's much more liberal, and I'm much more conservative. But that's okay because we still talk to each other. We celebrated the holidays together. The love of family should supersede anything that's going to like ostracize you from other family members just because of the political views. Even when we go vote, I'll tell her, I say, come on, let's go. So we're going, Dad. We're going to go vote. Dad, I'm not going to waste my time. It's a very red state. And I said, that's okay. I said, it's important that you vote. She goes, Dad, you're just going to cancel my vote. And I said, yep, that's how the system works. But that's okay. You know? So we get along great, and we don't go too deep because I know she's not going to change my view, and I'm not going to change hers, and that's okay. I'm proud of the fact that she does have a view and that she stands by it. So, but to think of, like I said, ostracizing each other, that's just asinine. I mean, it really is. But I'm just shocked at how many people are doing that these days.
It is. It is. It's really sad, and I'm so glad you called with this. Such a happy story. It gives people hope, especially people who may have been ostracized by their family, that maybe they'll come around. Maybe it won't be too far down the road, and they'll open their hearts again to family members, especially. You know, listen, I lost friends, college roommate, first time around in 2016. We were good friends, and, you know, she came out as gay, and she got married, and I was super supportive, and I sent her a gift and everything else. And she unfriended me the day and sent me a note slamming me because I voted for that racist. And that was it. I haven't spoken to her since. That's it. It's like... And that's fine. I'm totally cool with it. It's obviously at this point in the game, I'm just like, whatever. It's high school actions to me. But it's sad how some people get so wound up in that as opposed to just saying, hey, it's an election. But I think they're just led to believe that it's literally the end of democracy. There's all the fear mongering. And I think it affects people. And so they really are truly fearful of what's going to happen. And so they can't believe that you would vote for someone who wants to hurt them or is going to destroy the world. And so they get very emotional about it. Chuck, thanks for sharing the story. Appreciate it. Have a wonderful, wonderful new year. Let's go next to Bruce in York, Pennsylvania. Hey, Bruce. Welcome. You're on the Brian Kilmeade Show. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to. I'm a little bit upset here, but so it's starting to hit me now because I talked to the screener, you know, and everything what's going on. But before I even tell, I guess you know what the screener said. I assume. But anyhow, real quick, before I get to what I called about, I want you to see a movie called, on the Hallmark Channel, it's called Love, Lights, and Hanukkah. It's going to be on December 30th, and it's very much like this woman who found out about her birth mother years later.
Oh, okay. Well, if I have the time, I'm one of those people who doesn't have a lot of time to watch the Hallmark Channel, but I'll give it a shot. So go ahead. We don't have a lot of time.
You can actually see it online too. Love okay. Lights Hanukkah. That's
right,
the name of the
you.
Movie.
Thank
but
you.
That's not what I called about. I'm sorry.
Okay.
So what I called about is I have this cousin, and are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Go.
Okay. So I have this cousin in New Jersey. I called him up. We talk about once every 4 weeks, 5 weeks, whatever. He's I'm 70. He's like 82, whatever. He's still married with his wife and everything. And we talk to each other and every so often check base, see how's your health, you know, whatever. So I called him in July and, you know, we don't normally talk much about politics, but we're getting close to the election, you know, and I think it was after Trump got shot, you know, whatever.
Right, okay.
So I just bring up things and I said, well, he starts telling me about how Trump's Hitler and this and that. And it's like, wait, whoa. What about the Abraham Accords? Didn't he do good? You know, he's Jewish. I'm Jewish. And I said, he said, oh, that didn't mean anything. Nothing's happened from him. Look what's going on now. I said, but what about the Jerusalem? We got the embassy in Jerusalem now. So what? Who cares? And like everything I said was like, it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
It means nothing to him. Now, I normally talk to him once every 4, 5, 6 weeks. It's been since July. I had not contacted him. I sent him a Hanukkah card a couple of weeks ago, hoping to break the ice. Hope everything's okay with you, not in the hospital, yada, yada, yada. Don't really mention anything about the election. I just say hope 2025 is a better year. I have not heard any response from him. And this is a guy that we would talk typically once a month, once every 6 weeks, just shoot the breeze for a half hour or an hour. And I'm wondering now at this point, I don't know whether I should just pick up the phone and call him or send him a second letter. Checking up. I didn't hear from you. Hoping everything is. Maybe you can expand on that.
Well, okay. And Bruce, happy Hanukkah. Thank you so much for joining us. I do appreciate your story. And I think a lot of people are in that situation. I think you do what you feel like doing. You're going to feel one way or the other. You're thinking about calling him. That's probably because you want to call him. It doesn't hurt to pick up the phone and call him and say, hey, happy Hanukkah. I haven't heard from you. I just want to make sure you're okay. I really care about you. And don't bring up politics. And if he rebuffs you, then you have your answer. But I think that that's something that, you know, you already know what you want to do. I want to quickly get to Ryan in Arizona. Ryan, I have about a minute and a half here. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Hey, no worries at all. Thanks for taking my call and Merry Christmas. So as I would imagine a lot of families in this country are, we've got some on both sides. We've got some loud and proud classic California liberals. And we've also got some pretty tried and true blue right-leaning Republicans in our family. Usually it's not a big deal, except every 4 years when the elections roll around, then all of a sudden things get heated and ugly and accusations and finger-pointing. Our Democrat family members, I believe, fell victim to living in the media bubble that was telling them Harris waltz in a landslide, 70-30 electoral victory imminent, blah, blah, blah. Well, they were dishing it out pretty ugly in the weeks leading up to the election, already talking about her cabinet picks, talking about the historic first woman president. They were laying it on pretty thick and poking and prodding pretty badly. However, post-election time, things suddenly turned very, very ugly, and there were a lot of accusations very reminiscent of the things they accused Trump of doing in 2020 and also the Hillary election denier end of things. Our middle-of-the-road family and our right-leaning family just kind of sat back, kept quiet, don't talk politics, there's no need for it, we're just trying to have good family holidays, and it didn't turn out so well, and that was really disappointing this year. It doesn't have to denigrate into the ugly mudslinging and finger-pointing, but somehow our liberal-leaning family members just can't help themselves, and that's frustrating, you know?
Wait, so were, like, punches thrown to people? Anybody start crying? People leave angry?
We did have some angry conversation, nothing physical, but we had the accusations about Hitler and wants to put you back in chains and women in the basement and those kinds of utterly ridiculous accusations. But it doesn't really matter. It's what they believe because they fell victim to living in their own liberal bubble. That's all they heard. That's all they wanted to hear. Mm-hmm. And not willing or clear-headed enough to see both sides of the argument. Really,
well, there's T-shirts that say Trump's your daddy. You should probably get those for gifts.
I got
family.
A handful of clever ones for Christmas, but I'm not going to wear them around. I'm not looking to start a fight. I'll wear them out to Walmart, but I'm not looking to start a fight.
Oh, Ryan, well, I'm sorry, but thank you for sharing the story. I don't think you are alone. Emmett lost some friends and won't talk to him anymore over the election as well. Sorry I didn't have time to get to your call, Emmett. I'm Mary Walter, and you're listening to The Brian Kilmeade Show. And welcome to the Brian Kilmeade Show. I'm Mary Walter sitting in for Brian. I will be with you tomorrow and I will be with you on Monday as well. So I'm looking forward to that. Let's talk a little bit about what's going to bring, what is Trump going to bring to us in 2025? Mary Vogt joins us. She is the Vice President of Strategic Communications at the Heritage Foundation, and she is here to fill us in on what we can expect. Mary, thank you for joining me. I really appreciate it. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year.
Thank you, Mary. No, it's great. I listen to you a lot on WMAL living in the Washington, D.C. area, so it's great to chat with you.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I do. I do miss it a lot. So I appreciate the compliment. So what Trump plans to do in 2025, it seems to me, and I could be wrong, he already knows he's planning out 2026 already. He had 2025 planned out before the election. He had his cabinet planned out before the election. I think that he knows exactly what he wants to address, the order in which he wants to address them. He's got this all done. Like, he's that 4D chess player. And he's already, like I said, into 2026. So what do you see coming down the pike?
Yes. Yeah, I think you're exactly right. We've seen this with Donald Trump. He is always three steps ahead of everybody else. That's why he's such a great candidate. And that's why he's going to have another successful presidency. So, you know, he's made some stellar picks with these cabinet nominations, the whole DOGE. Like, he understands the American people want government efficiency. They want their tax dollars used in a very good, frugal way. And so, yeah, we're going to see a lot of that type of policy. I mean, this is his last term. He wants to go out with a bang. And so he's going to implement the policies that he ran on. And that's, as you know, what sets him apart from all other candidates, because most candidates that we've seen in D.C., and I know you know a lot of elected officials, they campaign one way, and then once they're elected, they legislate completely opposite. And that's not Donald Trump. He made promises to the American people. He said he would close the border, you know, fix the economy, bring credibility back to the world stage. And so he's going to implement those policies because he knows that's what the promises that he made to the American people.
Yeah, and that's what they want him to do. They want him to implement those policies. And a little side note, when we did get to meet him and we had a conversation with him, he had some, like, a handful of radio people and in the Oval, and he was asking us questions about, like, things we thought and what our listeners were saying, which I thought was such an indication of who he is. He's like, I know what people in Washington, D.C. think. I want to know what my listeners think, you know, what your listeners think. What do the people out there think? And that's why we were there. And at the end of it, I said to him, you know, just as an aside, you know, we didn't know if we were going to meet you or not, but I asked my friends from New Jersey, like, what do you want me to ask him? Like, if I could ask him one question, what do you want? Or you want me to tell him? And every single one of them told me to tell him to do what you said you were going to do. That's why they elected you. And he took me by the arm, and it was walked in. There were some new congressmen there. One of them was Liz Cheney. One of them was Dan Crenshaw. And he brought them over, and he's like, listen to what she's saying. Listen to what she has to say. And that is so important to him. That he does what the people elected him to do, that he does what he said he promised the people he was going to do. And I truly believe that he believes that, like, he's genuine about that, or else he would not have had that reaction, you know? So
absolutely. Yeah. Remember his first term when he had the regional radio host join the press briefing room? Because he knew that it wasn't just the main national media press corps. Right. He wanted a lot of those regional shows and hosts to listen in and ask questions and be able to get answers for their listeners, because he knew they were the ones that represented the grassroots America.
You know, how much of this has to do with Barron? Not so much radio, but I think, like, the social media and Donald Trump switching up the way in which he communicates. To me, there's been a noticeable difference in the way in which he communicates. And Barron, we know, was responsible for him going on Joan Rogan, going on with Theo Von, going on some of these other podcasts. And that was all Barron. And I think it has really affected the way he communicates with the American people.
I think you're absolutely right. I mean, I think we always need to let Donald Trump be Donald Trump. We saw, unfortunately, in the first term, a lot of political insiders and strategists were trying to tell him to be a different way or act a certain way. And he is a phenomenal communicator. He is naturally funny. He knows the issues. And he, like you said, has a pulse on what the American people want. And so put him on those platforms. Let him display himself, let him speak directly to the American people. And like you said, that was a brilliant strategy that helped him win this election. And we saw the complete opposite from Kamala Harris, where she refused to talk to media without it being scripted and planned out. And it was to her detriment.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I'm glad to see that. And he I think he realizes he's so much smarter and wiser now when it comes to the swamp and when it comes to the people in Washington, D.C., and knowing what they're going to do and what they're not going to do as far as their job is, that I think that is affecting his communication as well. Like, he knows now what he's up against and how they behave and how Washington, D.C. works. And that's obviously to our benefit. However, I will say that his texts, did you see, you saw his text yesterday, right? Where he's totally trolling Justin Trudeau about becoming the governor of Canada, right? As our 51st state. He's totally trolling on the Panama Canal with China and he's wishing a Merry Christmas to the wonderful soldiers in China who are running the Panama Canal. And then he went off on the radical left lunatics. And the best part of it all for me isn't the message, because we all know he's trolling. We all know that but he's partially serious. I mean, there's a certain, he's sending a message with it, but just sitting back with like some popcorn and going down my X feed, right? And just looking at the left who is like, see, he's going to take over the world. It's so much fun. And I think he knows exactly what he's doing with that.
He does. Yeah, I read that entire text message out loud to a friend and I couldn't get through it without laughing because it's so brilliant. And he has the gravitas to back it up because he knows when it comes to Trudeau in Mexico, this is what we're going to do on tariffs. We're going to close the border. This is what we're going to do. And everybody knows that he will do it because he's not going to take no for an answer, which is oftentimes what strategists tell people and elected officials in D.C., like, no, you can't do that. Well, this is how it's always been done. And he says, find a way. Let's get it done. Find a way. It's what the American people want.
Yeah.
And so that message was classic Trump. It was hilarious. And he knows he has the drive behind it to get it done. And he also has the American people, like you said. I mean, he won the popular vote. Overwhelmingly, there were no questions about where the country stood on these key policy issues. They wanted change, and they wanted Trump to be the one to make the change. And so I think he knows he has that support behind him, and he knows that he is the person that can get it done.
You are very involved in with people with disabilities. You are Donald Trump's presidential nominee appointment on the National Council on Disability. You are currently serving on the Virginia Board for People with Disabilities, and you are an advocate for people with disabilities. I keep hearing from the left that if Donald Trump does get rid of the NEA, you know, the National Education Association, get rid of that national education program that we have in the United States at the top and puts it back towards the local communities, that people with handicaps and disabilities aren't going to be able to get an education. They're not going to be able to go to school. They're not going to get all of the benefits that they have now. Is that true?
Probably not. I think we saw with Project 2025, people were saying that the project would get rid of kids' IEPs that they have in school. None of it's true. All conservatives want to do, and what Donald Trump wants to do, is give control and say back to the parents where it belongs. And as a mother of a child with a disability, I have dealt with government bureaucracy. I have dealt with all of this, you know, the healthcare systems and the government agencies that don't communicate with each other. And I am my child's own advocate. And thank God that, you know, we have a president who cares about that and understands the concerns. And he just wants the parents to be able to determine what's best for their kids. And we saw in the first term that Donald Trump did a lot for people with disabilities. The Right to Try bill that he passed, that all Democrats and Republicans supported in Congress, it hadn't been done before. And it was very common sense. If you have a terminal illness and you have the ability to try a life-saving medication that hasn't fully been approved by the FDA, that you should be able to have access to that drug. And it saved many people's lives. And so when they vilify him, when they say that he's a Nazi, when he hates people with disabilities, it's not true. It's not factual. He cares about these individuals, and the policies that he supports do the same.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I find it hard to believe that he wouldn't want children with disabilities to get, you know, their IEPs and all those other an education, basically an education. We have an election for a speaker coming up. And if I would like to talk to you about that, can you just hang on for like 2 minutes and then we can talk about that? Do you mind?
Absolutely.
Fantastic. All right. We've got more with Mary Vogt coming up. She is with communications at the Heritage Foundation. We're going to talk about that speaker election coming up because I've got a couple of nominees that have been floated out there and I've been writing them down. And some of them are very interesting. That's coming up on The Brian Kilmeade Show.
Expanding your knowledge base. It's The Brian Kilmeade Show. Breaking news. Unique opinions. Hear it all on The Brian Kilmeade Show.
There has been questions about whether Mike Johnson is at risk of not being the Speaker of the House in a couple of weeks. What do you think?
I think that's a real risk, and there will be no Democrats available to save him or the extreme MAGA Republicans from themselves based on the breaching of a bipartisan agreement that reflected priorities that were good for the American people.
And that was Circle Backy Sackey and Hakeem Jeffries. They're talking about the imminent election, and it's coming up January 3rd in the House for their speaker. And Mike Johnson seems to be in trouble. Mary Vogt is with us. She's the VP of Strategic Communications at the Heritage Foundation. So, Mary, look into your crystal ball. Are we in for another 15-round vote-a-rama on a speaker from the Republicans?
That is the million-dollar question, Mary. Thank you for having me back. I like the comments from that clip that were played that said it was a bipartisan bill that was good for the American people. I'm not sure when pay raises for congressional members is good for the American people and all of the pork and spending that was in that spending bill. So we're going to have to wait and see. The wild card, obviously, is Donald Trump. If he's going to support another candidate that opposes Speaker Johnson. Speaker Johnson is in a lot of trouble. The spending bill that he put forward was completely tone deaf. It was not in line with what the American people said on November 5th. They wanted change. They wanted responsible governance. They wanted the economy fixed, the border closed. They wanted these priorities implemented, and that bill that was put forth was horrific. And it was honestly an embarrassment because Elon and Vivek had to come out, expose it, you know, give the long laundry list of pork that was involved in it in order to get them to go back to the table and come up with something more reasonable. And so that doesn't look like leadership to me. We're going to have to wait and see. I don't think as of today, any other candidates have emerged as, you know, being willing to challenge him. There are some congressional members like Massey who've said that they're not going to support him. So a couple weeks is a long time in D.C. timeline, so we're going to have to wait and see. But like I said, the wild card is Donald Trump and what he wants to do in this process and who his candidate will be.
And that's what I was going to ask, you know, who does Donald Trump really back? He seemed to be quite friendly with Mike Johnson. But now there are questions as to whether he will support the January 6th committee and raising it to a full committee and getting to the bottom of what really happened on January 6th. And there's also allegations that he blocked a subpoena for Cassidy Hutchinson from the committee while Barry Loudermilk was running it. And there's questions about that. And Julie Kelly has come out and said, this confirms what I've heard from my congressional sources, that he blocked it. Now, of course, he released a statement saying that's not true. I don't know. There just seems to be a lot of smoke.
Yeah, there is a lot of smoke. And we're not privy to the private conversations that he's had with Donald Trump. But as we said earlier in the show, of all candidates and individuals, Donald Trump understands what the American people want. And so if he sees Speaker Mike Johnson as an individual that can't implement that agenda, his agenda that he wants to push through, then he's going to go with a different candidate. We don't really know who that person is yet, but we know that whatever the GOP agenda is going to be in the House and the Senate, it's going to be the Trump agenda because he ran on it. He made the promise, and it's what the American people want.
So just one last question. Do you think Trump would get behind making Elon Musk speaker?
I'm not sure. I don't know if he, you know, sees him as more valuable in the Doge enterprise. I'm not sure what if discussions along those lines. I do know that Elon has his pulse on what the American people want as well. And he's been very instrumental, you know, leading up to the transition, helping with these cabinet secretary picks and implementing, you know, plans so that on day one, the Trump administration can hit the ground running in order to get our country back on track. So we're going to have to wait and see. He definitely understands the goals that the American people want and what Trump wants. So it could be an option, but it's never a boring time in this world of politics, Mary. It's always fun to watch and see what happens.
It is. It truly is. It's a sport for it's a nerd sport for those who were never athletic enough to get to be cheerleaders and football players, right? So our little nerd sport is politics.
Yes, it's very entertaining, so we'll have to wait and see. But I will be following you and looking into your commentary and seeing what you think about all of this.
All right. Well, Mary Vo, thank you so much for joining me. Again, Merry Christmas, and I hope you have a wonderful new year. And I'm fingers crossed for 2025, 26, 27, and 28. That's pretty much where my hope
you
is
too.
Right now.
Yes, you too. Thank you.
Thank you so much. All right, I'm going to want to take your calls coming up, 866-408-7669, 866-408-7669, or you can reach out to me at Mary Walter Radio. So if you want to talk about the speakership, we can talk about that. You can talk about some names that have been floated, like Trey Gowdy and Elon Musk and Byron Donalds, Jim Jordan. Those are all names that have been floated. I kind of like to see like an Ana Paulina Luna, even a Marjorie Taylor Greene. I just look at Nancy Pelosi, and she is such an effective speaker. You got to hand it to her. You may not like her politics, but Nancy Pelosi, you got to give credit where credit is due. She's a really good speaker. She's super effective. She's an incredibly effective politician. We need that on the right. And I just think like a Ana Paulina Luna or an Marjorie Taylor Greene don't care about being reelected. They just want to get the job done. So they're going to go and they're just going to go full into it. And I think they would both be willing to complete the Trump agenda. They'd be all in on the Trump agenda, especially MTG. She would be all in. Ana Paulina Luna, which they don't call APL, would probably be all in too, but maybe not as overt. maybe a softer version of Marjorie Taylor Greene. But I think both of those women, I think they should be considered as well in the mix. Maybe it's time for a little bit of a change and see if we can get our own version of Nancy Pelosi. All right, coming up, I'm going to share with you something that happened at Mass Christmas Eve to me. We'll talk about that coming up on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Mary Walter in for Brian Kilmeade. 866-408-7669 or reach out to me on X at Mary Walter Radio. And we can talk about the speakership if you'd like, you know, who you want to see for speaker. You think we should keep Mike Johnson, somebody else? Do you have any ideas? But I also want to bring in here something that happened to me Christmas Eve. So we went to 3:30 Mass because our diocese now got dispensation to have Mass like at 2 o'clock, early Mass. So we had our church was 3:30. And we decided to do that instead of the 11 o'clock because we're old. And so we went to the 3:30 and it's packed, it's packed, it's packed. So we're standing in the back, off to one side in the back. And we were with all of the Christmas and Easter onlys. You know what that's like? And there's one guy over to the side and his kid was like 10 years old. And this kid talked through the entire Mass and Dad just talked back to the two of them the whole time. I was ready to launch my cell phone at the father's head by the time we were about halfway through Mass. I just wanted to, and in front of us was standing, because we were standing in the back up against the wall, in front of us was a father, mother, three teenage daughters. They were beautifully behaved. Everything was fine. And in front of them was this woman. And she had to be, I couldn't tell if it was like a hard 50 or she was in her early 60s or something. You know, I couldn't tell. And she's there and, you know, everything's fine. And then she walks out all of a sudden. She goes into the vestibule. I don't know where she went outside, whatever. But she comes back in with three other women, leads them in front of the family where she was standing before. And she said, oh, is this okay? Can you see? And they're like, yeah, yeah. And then the four of them just started a reunion. They're talking, they're laughing, they're having, oh, it's been so long since I've seen you. The whole undercurrent through the consecration, through into the communion. And it was driving everybody crazy. You could see the looks. Everybody's like, what is happening? It was so wildly inappropriate. So, because it's me, I just went up to them. I walked around my husband, walked around the family, behind the family, in front of us. And I just leaned in and I said, excuse me, ladies, but would you mind, you know, being quiet so that the rest of us can enjoy Mass? Well, the redheaded chick, the one who was originally there, goes, I don't even remember what she said to me, but I was just like, then take it into the vestibule. Thank you. And I just walked back. She follows me and starts like yelling at me, but in a whisper. She was whisper yelling at me in church. And she's like, well, you have to understand, my friend's husband died 2 days ago. So maybe you should have a little grace and maybe you should. And I was just like, what is happening? I'm like, take it to the vestibule. And then I just stopped. I'm not engaging anymore. And she's like yelling, whisper yelling at me as she walks away back to her friends. And we're watching this and they're laughing and everything else. And I'm like, which one is the grieving widow? Because you're all having a grand old time with your reunion here. So it was just the weirdest thing. So I got to talk about the normalization of deviance. I don't know when it started. I don't know when people just started. Like if you say something to somebody where not that long ago, you would be embarrassed. Like if someone had told me that I need to be quiet in church, I would be mortified. And I'd be like, I'm so sorry. And then you wouldn't hear another peep from me, but not them. She followed me to yell at me because she was speaking. They were having a reunion during church, during Mass. When did that become normal? This is why, like on the subway, nobody says anything when a woman's set on fire and they just walk away. And I think that's the Daniel Penny effect, 100%. I'm not getting involved, because they'll arrest me and I'm going to jail and I don't have that kind of time. I'm not getting involved. But I think this is, I don't know if this is part of it. I don't know what it is. 866-408-7669. So the rest of us just sit there and suffer in silence and we'll just like not listen to Mass. We just won't listen to while these guys have their reunion because nobody wants to say anything except me. And she just like went to crazy. Like she's so entitled that she is allowed to have a reunion instead of just doing it in the vestibule. She's allowed to have a reunion and how dare I say anything? And people who go into stores or these fast food restaurants, even regular restaurants, and they're like throwing the French fries at the poor kid behind the counter or a senior citizen who's working for minimum wage because they ordered a large and they only got a small. So instead of kindly saying something, you know, saying, hey, you got my order wrong, they're having a pitching a fit and throwing fries around the restaurant. And then they pick up like the cash register and they're throwing that and they're throwing stuff everywhere. And people are just having mental breakdowns in public. And we're all acting like this is normal. It's just weird. And J. Christian Adams and Hans von Spakovsky have a piece out, and it's The Uncivil Left Wrecks Domestic Civility at Home. And they talk about it on a larger scale. They talk about it with, for instance, Brett Kavanaugh and Justice Alito. In Virginia, it's illegal to protest outside someone's home. You're not allowed to do that. A lot of people live there who are, you know, part of the government. And these people set up shop and they were shining bright lights in their windows and blaring music, destroying the whole neighborhood, disturbing everybody and screaming and yelling things through loudspeakers into these people's homes to try to make their lives miserable. And of course, the law was never enforced because they were making conservatives' lives miserable. But we condone this weird, wacky, freak flag flying in public behavior. And when did it start? When did this entitlement start that I can act however I choose, whenever I choose, wherever I choose? And if you don't like it and dare say anything to me, I'm going to attack you. When did that become normal? I was watching two guys in ShopRite just before, let's see, I guess about a week or so ago. Maybe it was a little bit longer than that. And, you know, where the checkout is, there's usually a big aisle that goes, crosses it, bisects it, right? So people, if the line's long, they wait on the other side of that. So there's a space. So one guy didn't know people were waiting and it's a self-checkout. And so he starts unloading his stuff and the guy who was waiting starts screaming and yelling. And you just hear these two men screaming and yelling at each other in ShopRite. And they had to be in their 50s. Two grown men screaming and yelling. Now, the guy who put his stuff on the conveyor belt was wrong. He you know, there was a line. But the response of the other guy was just to scream across the store at him instead of going up and saying, hey, buddy, there's a line. And then the adult response would be, I'm so sorry. And you put your groceries back in your bag and you go get in line. That would have been the adult exchange. But no, they're standing there screaming and yelling at each other. And I thought, oh my gosh, these two dudes are going to start, their punches are going to be thrown over the checkout line in ShopRite. And otherwise, they're normal looking people, but they're just not behaving like normal people. And I don't know if it's from COVID. I don't know if this is the everybody gets a trophy generation that has now, you know, come of age and they're just acting like crazy people because, you know, their parents let them throw fits. I don't know. But people are definitely more rude. They don't know how to drive anymore. I mean, the people drive. I have a camera now. I put a camera in my car so that when there is the inevitable crash, that I can say, nope, here it is. It ain't me. They're rude. Nobody says, like, if you walk in front of a car and they stop for you in the crosswalk, always, like, give them a little wave. Not anymore. Nobody gives you a wave. They don't move. They don't hustle. They don't get out of your way. There's, like, zero civility, it seems. So if you want to jump in, 866-408-7669, I want to give you some time here, so I will get to your calls coming up on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Giving you everything you need to know. You're with Brian Kilmeade. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
And I'm Mary Walter, sitting in for Brian. I'll be back with you tomorrow. And I'm looking forward to that. And also on Monday as well. So we're just talking about the incivility, it seems, that has just sprung up very pretty quickly, I think, in society. Even adults, you know, I was telling a story about a Christmas Eve mass and this group of adult women, older than me, some of them, and just feeling it's okay. I don't care that I'm disturbing mass for you. I'm going to have my little reunion and too bad for you. Let's go to Joe in New York. Joe, you are on the Brian Kilmeade Show. Hi, Joe.
Good morning. I appreciate the opportunity to share with you. You know, as I was saying to the gentleman answered my phone call, when someone goes to church, and it happens at my church on occasion as well, people come in during worship. You know, they'll come in. I'm a greeter sometimes, and they'll come in, I mean, 15, 20 minutes late. And, I miss out on some of it. But like I say to my son, we have an eternity to worship, so that's okay. But I said, you know, it gets me because it's a complete lack of fear of God, you know, to go into a place of worship where people are trying to come together and meet with him and worship him and thank him for coming and all those things. And it's a complete disrespect to those around you and a complete disrespect to God. That's just how I see that.
Yeah, I do. But see, I think these are just the, you know, the what do we call them? The palms and what is it? Palms and holly Catholics. You know, they're only there for the palms and on Easter and you know, the holly at Christmas. Then sometimes you get them for Ash Wednesday because they want the ashes, you know, so they can virtue signal. But so they don't know. And they're just going because it's the thing to do. If they're not there for worshiping, they're not there for the mass. They're just there to, you know, meet friends and talk.
I wonder, too, if there would be ushers there. I mean, wouldn't an usher go up and say, ladies, please, you know, let's take it to, you know, to the vestibule if you'd like. But, you know, people are trying to worship here or something. I mean, an usher would be good at that, too.
Yeah. Well, it was packed to the gills. So it was standing room only. It was packed to the gills. It was halfway up the sides, you know. So getting through the crowd, I mean, like, I just like, snuck around to say something. But it shouldn't take an usher to say something to them. It just shouldn't. So I don't know. I you make a good point, though. You do. Joe, thank you so much. I appreciate you joining me. Why do I have to say anything at all? Why does anybody have to say anything? What is wrong with people? How do you not know that when you go into church, you're not supposed to stand there or sit there and just have your own private conversation with your girls because you haven't seen each other in a while? How do people not know this? Or do they know and they don't care, which is pretty much what I think is happening. I think they know. They just don't care. Nobody cares, but it's all about them. It's me, 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 me. I tell my husband that all the time, and he laughs at me. He's like, no, it's not. Rob in Tampa. Rob, you're on the Brian Kilmeade Show. Hi.
Hey, Rachel. How are you today?
Good, but I'm married, but that's okay.
Thanks for taking my call. First, real quick comment on the CEOs you're referring to that come to the Christmas and Easter onlys. I know, you know, sometimes I feel like we have to give a, and I'm totally in agreement with you, but I think sometimes their normal behavior, just they don't have the regular weekly understanding
of how you are supposed to conduct yourselves. But that shouldn't matter in church. You should still have your certain T's and Q's that you follow. But what I really wanted to mention to you was, number one, to really acknowledge and say thank you for that, what you mentioned earlier about the normalization of deviance. I think that's what I wanted to comment on, and that is such a sad mark on society. I'm going to take it back even further than that and say what you're seeing today with the normalization of deviance really started many years ago. I'm going to go back 20 or 25, because I think that type of behavior was birthed even back then. And I'm going to share one quick personal example, and I love your comment on it, because I'm going to go down one notch further than just the deviance and the normalization, but just the deviance of normal behavior in society going kind of off the deep end. And here's a personal example. So I'm at a department store one day. I get on an elevator. It's only two floors. Me and one other lady on the elevator. They're cosmopolitan. They're an attractive lady, probably in her mid-40s. Mm-hmm. And as the elevator stopped, I do what I've done my whole life for 50-something years. I put my arm out to hold the elevator for a lady to walk out first. Would you believe that she got not only offended, but scarfed at me and yelled at me that she didn't need anybody to hold the door open? And I immediately apologized and said, I'm not sure if you took that the wrong way, but it was simply an act, a gesture of respect for a lady that's getting on the off the elevator. And she continued to barrage about how she didn't need anybody to do that. So my only response was, I apologize, but what you don't understand is I've been doing this since I was 5 years old. I hold the door open. I say, thank you. I say, please. And I said, this is a mark. This is an example, maybe extreme, but yet an example of where society has gotten to with our mores, with our norms, with our understanding of just common courtesies and respect, as you mentioned earlier.
People. You know, and here's the thing, and thank you so much for joining me. Have a wonderful, wonderful new year. I wish you the best. We're just going to make it quick because we're kind of up against the clock. I just, if someone says that to me, I'm like, cool, next time I'll just let it slam in your face. Fine. I'm not explaining myself to those people, because there's something wrong with them. I truly believe there's just something wrong with them. So I'm not explaining myself to crazy people. I don't have the kind of time for that, nor should I have to. Anna in Michigan, welcome. You're on the Brian Kilmeade Show. We have a couple minutes here. Hi, Anna.
Hi, how are you?
Doing great. So go ahead. The deviation that's happening.
Okay, I'm super excited. I've never done a thing like this in my life, I want to tell you, and called into any show.
All right.
So anyway, I was just telling the person I was talking to that I am just dumbfounded by what you said about what was happening in church and how everything has been so flipped so upside down in our society during all of this, like COVID and to current. And everything is backwards, right? Like, how are we the ones, like you said, who you're trying to enjoy a Christmas service and these people are disrupting that and you kindly ask them to leave? So I just feel like I'm praying and hoping that in 2025, beginning with the day Trump takes office, that he's going to bring like hope, peace, and joy back into our society. Because I think that during COVID, especially the far left liberals who infiltrated the Democratic Party, because I think there's a lot of great Democrats, but I think that far left really wanted to create such hate and brainwash and just infiltrated our media and got into people's heads and just started creating all this animosity among just our neighbors and our friends and our families. Mm-hmm. And so I'm super thrilled and excited. I've been praying about it. I'm a Christian and just praying and praying that things would change for the future of our country. And I was ecstatic to see that Trump came around again. Super excited. My two daughters, for the first time ever, were able to vote in a presidential election and vote together. And for it to be Trump that they voted for, they were thrilled. And go ahead.
No. We're running out of time. I'm sorry. I don't mean to cut you off. But that generation is the one where the pendulum's swinging back the other way. The first time voters, Trump won. they overwhelmingly voted for Trump. And this is young men, young women, although it's more men, young men than it is more young women, but of all across races, everything. That's the generation. And it happens when the pendulum goes too far to the left or too far to the right, the next generation comes along and says, I'm not having any more of this. And they rebel. I mean, that's what you do at that age, right? You rebel. So they rebel against it, and they voted for Trump in very, very large numbers. Anna, I'm flattered that I'm your first. thank you so much. I'm glad you had a wonderful Christmas, and all the best to you in the new year. Yeah, I'm hoping that the way we turn this ship around, if we can, is that we start to enforce our laws. We start to hold people accountable for bad behavior. If you're playing the fool in the middle of ShopRite and you start, you know, going off and popping off, somebody comes by and says, hey, we will not have this here. This is not normal behavior, and we're not going to do this, or you get thrown out. Those are the things that have to start happening. People have to be held accountable for their bad behavior. But that's just me. I'm Mary Walter, and you've been listening to The Brian Kilmeade Show.
Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.